Hello?
Brian?
Yes.
Hey, guy, Steve Skelton. How are you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm doing good, doing good. Now, we're going to a spiritual audience with this interview, so I'm going to focus on the spiritual side of Superman and then the spiritual symbolism in Superman Returns. And so I'll actually start off with a quote from you. And here we go. This is the first question. In an interview with Wizard Magazine last year, you said, quote, "Superman is the Jesus Christ of superheroes," end quote. So how is Superman the Jesus Christ of superheroes?
Well, I think, in a couple of ways. One, because I think that piece of terminology implies a weight to the character.
Yes.
If you're saying this is the Jesus Christ of anything, you're pretty much applying a measure of importance and weight to something, obviously. I also think, in a way, there's something, and I think there's something probably it started to evolve in the early evolution of the comic, but became extremely crystallized in Richard Donner's interpretation in 1978, and that was the notion brought forth by something Jor-El, Marlon Brando, as Jor-El the father said, which is quite simply, when referring to the people of Earth, he says, they can be a great people, Kal-El, they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. It is for this reason, above all, their capacity for good. I send them you, my only son.
Yes.
And there was something that when I heard that as a kid, there was something that resonated very much with me. I was a Jewish kid, adopted, only child. I grew up in a Catholic neighborhood. I used to go to a Christian youth club, so I was very religiously very all over the place. I was not a particularly religious kid. I grew up, growing up, but those influences and those ideas, and somehow seeing them come forward in movies like Superman and also Star Wars, for that matter,
E.T.
Strange way, seeing these kind of, I call them Judeo-Christian allegories. Emerge in these science fiction what are ostensibly science fiction fantasy films, I found very potent to me, and I have a fundamental belief that these comic book heroes, characters like Superman, will emerge as our 20th century's mythologies.
Yes.
The same, and 500 years from now, they'll be looked back at kind of the same way that we look back at King Arthur and Merlin and Excalibur and these other myths that were very much inspired by these, by Judeo-Christian principles.
Yes, yes.
And so in that way, that's the complex, I don't want to suck the entertainment out of it. It's still Superman. It's still supposed to be fun to the whole family, but ever since I heard Marlon Brando utter those words, the character had a meant in a celebratory way, had an additional messianic quality to him that he did not have necessarily when I was watching the 1950s television series.
It's true. It's absolutely true. And a quick sidestep there, just a thing that occurred to me. Thank God for Tom Mankiewicz, who went in there and did that type of a layering, because in the Puzo script, if you go back and look at that, all of those significant lines are really missing. And because they're missing, in my opinion, it does lack a certain depth, as you said a minute ago.
Absolutely. Mankiewicz, when I say Donner, I mean Donner slash Mankiewicz.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. No, and we've talked about it. I sat with both of them, and in fact, they were at the premiere, and they were shocked, they were surprised that I went so deep into the Brando language to access some of those, some of those things, and to also utilize some of those visual iconography.
What's Donner's current temperature on that whole thing? Mankiewicz has been very free in talking about it, and Donner strikes me, he's always been just a little bit hesitant.
I think because Richard Donner comes from he might not talk about it simply because he considers himself like most of us, an entertainer first.
Right, right, right.
And he doesn't want and he doesn't want to make it about it, you know, too much more than entertainment.
Right.
That being said, I guarantee he's extremely bright, extremely brilliant, and observing gentleman, and I guarantee that none of that is lost to him.
Yeah, none of this escape. Yeah,
you
yeah.
may not like to talk about it, but with this film, and also the origin story of Superman was more analogous to the story of Moses, the child placed in the vessel,
right.
sent to another planet, or in the case, you know, or sent downriver to fulfill a destiny. In the case of Kal-El, sent to another world to.
Yes.
You know, to lead others. So I think in the origin story, the analogy was more about that.
Yes.
There was one to be drawn. Here in this movie, it's much more clearly about the return of a savior,
right.
sacrifice, and clearly there, you know, some I'm sure are coincidental that come from my subconscious as a filmmaker growing up in a Judeo-Christian culture, and some
yes.
of them are quite obvious and
yes,
quite
yes.
And are quite specific.
Yes.
Like, you know, I mean, they're...
Oh, I think we'll get to them. I think I'm headed. We're on the same ground, same holy ground here. Would Superman be as appealing if he did not have this Judeo-Christian allegory, or does it add some weight and depth and profundity to the Superman story?
I think he wouldn't. He might be appealing simply because he can fly and lift heavy things. but frankly, he would not be as longevic. Superman has survived for 70 years.
Yeah.
Some of the most bizarre incarnations through some of the most tumultuous times in global history.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's not a place you can go in the world that doesn't know Superman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have famously said, I think that this is just a side thing that just occurred to me, which I thought it was an apt comparison, but you said, you know, take the cross and the S shield into the jungle and you will have 50-50 recognition.
Yeah.
Time magazine, in their review, they said this. They said, quote, "Earlier versions of Superman stressed the hero's humanity. The Singer version emphasizes his divinity. He is Earth's savior, Jesus Christ, Superman." End quote. However, I take a little bit of issue with that. Certainly, Donner's Superman the movie stressed the parallels to Christ, as you were touching on before we started the interview. Now, and I think I know the answer to this, but do you see your version as different or similar in that regard? You know, doesn't it pick up from what Donner was doing and kick it up a notch?
It picks up from when Donner... It celebrates the thing... It celebrates that notion. I mean, the story... These stories are told in so many different ways, from Sunday school to pop culture. And if you're going to... If you've got a character, you're not saying that Superman is Jesus Christ.
Right.
No, he's Superman. He's the
right.
last son of the planet Krypton.
That's right.
Love
that's
Lois
right.
Lane. He has a human side. You know, there's a lot of things going on here that are not
that's right. That's, yeah.
that are a product of comic fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But if you're going to tell some of these, if you're going to have lines like Marlon Brando saying, "I
yeah.
send them you, my only son,"
so, yeah.
and they're being spoken, you know, in with absolute seriousness, then when you carry it forward and you have him return after 5 years, face an immeasurable conflict, and then it's
yeah.
if you're gonna do it, you gotta go.
Yeah.
If you're gonna tell that story, you've got to tell it all the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got Scourging in the Pillar, the Spear of Destiny. Death, resurrection, it's all there. You know?
Yeah.
And if you're going to... And I remember sitting with one of my writers, and we were watching the visual effect of him falling to Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
And his hands are extended, and
yeah.
he falls to Earth in that very...
It's the crucifixion pose. It's beautiful. It's fantastic.
Yes, like,
yeah.
you know, and it reminded... And he looked at me, and he says... And, you know, he went to Catholic school. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
And he looked at me, and he said, should he open his legs a little bit more? Is this too on the nose? And I said, if we're telling the story,
tell it.
We're going to tell the story. If we're going to tell the story, some parts are going to be subtle.
Yeah, yeah.
But this one's not.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
one. And when we were in the theater, and he, you know, he was visiting the effects session, just looking at what I was doing. I said, and I just said, if either we're going to tell it or we're not.
Yeah, yeah.
Either we're going to have him like float down, kind of in, the, or not. And
yeah.
you know, he. I mean, it's entirely plausible than the way he we left him in the scene in the moment that he fall in this position and then he falls out of it. But but if we're gonna let if there was ever a time to hammer it home. This is it. Visually, this is it. And what's wonderful is when you see it with an audience, I worried that there would be a snicker, there could be a and instead you could hear a pin drop.
Oh, either that or it's gasps of people saying what an incredibly powerful image right there.
Well, and it's a plausible image.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's hang on one second, someone's at my door. And, oh, you let him. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, iconic image right there.
Yeah, and if you want to take people back to the other moments, those that are perhaps subconscious and those that are very conscious, in the moments in the movie leading up to that moment, leading up to that moment and following that moment, because the movie is also about fathers and sons, passing on of not necessarily powers, although there are powers, but also passing on ideologies. There's another thing Marlon Brando says. It's not particularly, I don't know if it's particularly allegorical, but it felt very religiously allegorical to me. But I don't know if it resonates. From the original film, she says, the mother, when they're putting this infant Kal-El into the space,
he will be alone.
She says he will be isolated.
He'll be isolated alone, yeah.
And Marlon Brando holds up this crystal.
He will not be alone.
He will not be alone.
He will never,
be alone.
Yeah.
He places it in the thing, and the power of that.
Yeah.
And maybe it's something to do with my own relationship with my family, and times when I'm an only child. I've not had brother or sister to sort of lean on. I've been sent out to California by myself, and have kind of made my way on my own, and yet I've fallen back on knowing that, and I'm very lucky because my parents have been in my life all my life and they're still here today. But there's something so potent about that, and that's why the crystal became, and that was the terrible thing that Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
The robbing of the crystals, it was just such a violation because it was, there's a lot of things, in that resonated back to the first.
But he was finally alone. He was alone. Superman was alone when the crystal was taken.
And then you get in again. I don't mean to, again, the allegories go they're quite. But suddenly it's like, why am I here? I don't want to be the guy who says, why have you forsaken me? But
nice. I love it.
Somebody else say that. Don't let but here he's standing there. And in the Fortress of Solitude, and it's gone, and that's what makes Lex Luthor such a wonderful villain in comparison, is because in that Superman is so simple in his moral compass and in his ideology, for better or worse, because it sometimes can be his weakness. He sometimes finds himself undermined. Lex Luthor is so clear.
Yeah,
and simple in his criminality. He doesn't want to rule the world. He doesn't want to destroy the world. He just wants his cut. He's a ruthless capitalist who has no sense of, he's a completely earthly. There is no divinity. He's completely
of
the earth. So now I'm getting into the stuff that I'd rather people discover as they watch the movie than.
No, and I think there was actually a couple of things that occurred there, but I'm headed toward a question that's going to touch on that, and I think a way that'll be easier to get into it. But I was just going to compliment you to talk about the line from 78 when he says he will not be alone, he will never be alone, and then to come back to a line that you put into the new movie, which is just before he says, you wrote that the world doesn't need a savior, but every day I hear people crying for it. He says, what do you hear? And she says, nothing, it's quiet. And he says, I hear everything. And I've had people tell me that they just had the hair on their arms stand up when he said that, because it's the same sentiment. You will not be alone. You will never be alone. I hear everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, powerful line. Hats off to that one.
And,
yeah.
And he says, and what he says to the child at the end.
Exactly.
The same is there will be times, and he's he's doing his best to kind of pass on this notion.
Right, right.
It's very, all the stuff's very resonant from Brando, and that's why I thought of having another actor say these lines, and I went to all of Brando's ADR sessions in London, and I said, he said it all.
He said it all.
He doesn't need to be alive.
Yeah.
Brando's been gone. You know, he's gone. He's not, you know,
right, right.
He's not a character. He's just a voice and an image.
Right.
So why not just use that voice? Because it sent my hairs up on my neck when I was, you know, 13 or whenever I
yeah.
ever saw it.
Yeah. Okay. I'll set this one up here, and you'll see where I'm going. But over the past 70 years, I think the story of Superman has kind of been modeled to reflect some major story components of the Christ story. And I'll just give you, you know, in 1938, of course, the beginning of the whole thing, the comics gave us the origin story, which you correctly pointed out is kind of like a Moses story. And I guess I am more influenced by the 78 Donner version, which, you know, made it a bit more Christian.
Oh, yeah, much more.
And,
I mean, it told the origin story, but it certainly, once he went to the Fortress of Solitude.
This is where I'm going. There's
his adulthood.
Yes.
That was his moment of...
That's right. There's that journey into the wilderness, right? Like Christ goes in the desert, Clark goes into the Arctic. Now he communes with the spirit of his father. It's mm-hmm. seemingly the spirit of his father. Okay, and then they even did the whole thing, as you mentioned a moment ago, about flying around the world, turning time backwards, and the emotional impact of that scene was all about raising Lois from the dead. Mm-hmm. So Superman's able to do that. Okay, then we go to the 1992 comic book storyline as we continue to kind of chart these major kind of Christ images, and the death of Superman, right?
Mm-hmm.
They show Superman die and resurrect to life. And now, in Superman Returns, he has ascended into the heavens, and then he comes back for a second time. Now, and in Entertainment Weekly this year, you had said that Superman Returns is, quote, a story about what happens when Messiahs come back, end quote. So, here's the whole setup for that was this question. How conscious were you of taking kind of the next major iconic step in the Superman story as the parallel to the biblical second coming story?
I'm not meant to tell it exactly because in the second coming there's a lot of events that in the rapture, things like that. There's a lot of things that come into play.
Yeah.
That have to do with. I mean, that's something I'm not. You know, I don't know if I'm like the right person to, you know, to give a dissertation on. on one hand, on the other hand, the personal journey, like my focus is sort of on the. You just when they're wheeling him through the hospital,
yeah.
and they see him,
yeah.
Splayed out, on the gurney,
yeah.
Splayed out on that gurney,
yeah.
And you see the look on all those faces.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, what was it like for the people, for people who put that kind of faith into this being, who far exceeds, and. Their own lives, and yet in some way represents them, and then by his example, in some way they feel a kinship to. And suddenly he's splayed out on a hospital bed, and his life is now in the hands of mortals. And on the musical score, actually, we title that the title of that piece of music on our score is "In the Hands of Mortals." Suddenly, there's a doctor, there's a guy there with the paddles, and I imagined. I didn't necessarily imagine like that whole event of what the moment they took him down.
That's right.
And suddenly the body is still the body.
That's right.
And then when they strip the suit off,
yeah.
There's the body. You know, you see the body,
yeah.
and the body has, although They can't put a needle through it,
right.
An epinephrine, you know, needle there or whatever, or adrenaline. Adrenaline, I guess you put in the chest, but they couldn't, you know, they
couldn't pierce the skin.
There's still there's still the, it's just the body.
Right.
And it's, and then there's still, and there's the wound.
Right.
And the wound is right, I mean, there's the stab, penetrating stab wound.
That's right.
You know, and it's the unthinkable, you know, and it's just all the, and so I just sort of imagine the intimate story.
Yeah.
You know, and I dare not draw comparisons to things like, I mean, I don't want to even give, because I'm not, you know, it is Superman. I really don't. I don't want to sit here and cry. You know, I'm not a. I would rather the audience discover these moments.
Yeah.
Even, you know, even when they try to use the, you know, they say Shaka 250.
Right.
He's not human.
Right.
It's all echoed. You know, sort of echoed in some ethereal place. Like maybe he's listening.
Right.
His heart rate is incredibly low.
Yeah.
And he's there's something about him. There's two times. Once he's rescued by Lois and Richard.
That's right.
Because that's the deeds coming around full circle.
Yeah.
And to me that, now see, if I'm telling you these analogies and they're coming from me, they're not very...
No, it's good. Because it is what people are writing.
When he falls and he's held up again.
Yeah.
And then there's the time when he's pulled off. And do you? I mean, it's so much better if it comes from you. Do you see what I do?
Yeah.
I mean, but there's a moment when Lois and Richard and the child save him.
That's right.
And then there's the other moment when he's nothing can save him.
Yes, exactly.
He still doesn't penetrate the defibrillator. They raise it to 300 because he's an alien. So they and it explodes. And now he's just. He's just left for fate.
Yes. And actually,
which of course does occur, and that's the moment, and those are the moments that follow that.
Yeah.
What's the word? That the journey for the through the city with the thing of the burden. You know.
Yeah.
If I articulate the parallels, they will become.
No.
All
right. I'm curious about your take on Lex that we brought up just a second ago. It strikes me that, and this has probably been inherent in the storyline from way back, but if you're going to say that Superman can be seen as a Christ figure, and he's going to have an arch enemy, who else would it be but a Lucifer figure? And so I'm curious, do you see Lex as kind of an embodiment of all that is evil? Do you see him as kind of a Lucifer figure?
Yeah, because he doesn't care.
Yeah.
He just cares about
billions,
and
right?
Land.
Yeah.
And he doesn't care, you know. And he muses about billions of people being drowned.
Right.
You know, and all that. But he's very much the opposite of Superman.
Yeah.
And it's not within Superman's consciousness to not heed those cries, and in juxtaposition, Lex Luthor, it's not within his consciousness to care about any loss of life. In fact, I think the only reason he wants people to live is just so he has, you know, he has someone to sell his, you know.
Right. His island too, right?
His island.
Yeah. It's that obsession with the worldly thing, you know.
Exactly. As I say, he's truly, you know, a character of the earth.
Yeah.
And of nothing more.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
And I don't say that in, you know, not the earth environmentally. I mean,
he
clearly doesn't give a damn about the environment.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's destroying the whole thing just so he can create this landmass. Okay, in other imagery dealing with Lex, there are lines of dialogue that explicitly compare Superman, the hero, you know, to the Christ figure. Jor-El says, he's my only son, he's the light to show the way. And then, get this, then Lex, the villain, he espouses this kind of Promethean, you know, kind of philosophy. He says, I just want to bring fire to the people, you know, like Prometheus. So I'm wondering, was the clash between kind of a symbolic true God figure, Superman, and a symbolic false God figure, Lex, intentional? Was that an intentional kind of a dynamic?
I don't think I thought it out to that degree. I think that might be a happenstance,
okay.
In all honesty. I think very much I just looked at the opposing viewpoints. You know,
he
says it as mind over muscle.
Yeah.
That really means is that the
you know what, is that worldly?
How you can get away with any, if you don't care, and you've got ideas, you can call it smart, but in reality, it's just it's lack of compassion.
Yeah.
Joni Mitchell's got a great. She has. With something about no mercy. Without mercy, what he is espousing is mind over muscle is actually mercilessness over might and right.
Yeah.
And how powerful mercilessness is.
Right.
You don't care.
Right.
You are capable of tremendous things.
Right.
You have enormous. And he's like, he's looking at her. I'm like, yeah, he may be, Lex, you're not a god. And he's like,
right.
I don't want to be a god.
Yeah.
But he believes he has, his power is in his mercilessness.
Right.
And that's what makes him, so dangerous to someone like Superman, who is got, mercy.
Right.
Who's got, mercy and overdrive.
That's right. And power. And the power to do anything, but the mercy not to.
The mercy not to destroy.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Too many things. He just doesn't destroy.
Right.
Destruction is not part of Superman's programming.
Right.
That's what makes him so special, is his use of control. And that's what makes him such an ideal, such an important inspiration for young people, because he does, because at some point a young person can get a hold of a gun or a stick or his fist. And Superman has all that in spades and chooses to if Superman were to step into a war, I don't think he would take sides. All he would do is just stop
the fighting,
the weapons from going off until people hopefully gave up pulling the trigger.
Right, exactly, yeah. Let me go to the first of the movie and kind of flow through the movie in brief. But at the first of the movie, after Superman crashes back to Earth and he collapses into Ma's arms,
yes,
the scene. We're both chuckling, yeah. And the scene recalls the Renaissance image of the dead Jesus in Mary's arms. Now, so let me ask you this from that standpoint. Was this kind of a volley shot? Was this kind of an intentional way of reestablishing, in your vision, of Superman Returns, Superman as the savior figure? We know he had been established in Donner.
Again, I that would be a question Dick may shy away from. But yes, very, the night of shooting that scene, Eva, Brandon, and myself, it is a mother cradling her son, but there's certainly an aspect there were certain key frames that were very special, important to me artistically, and that was one that was very much inspired by that, by that image.
Yeah. In fact,
I don't know if I was conscious of it as a piece of foreshadowing specifically, but it certainly was an image that I wanted to have specifically at that point in the movie between those two characters.
One of the lines that's become, I think, an instant classic from Superman Returns was, as I mentioned before, Superman says to Lois, "You wrote that the world doesn't need a savior," and the way that Brandon delivers it is fantastic. But every day I hear people crying for one. Okay, I'm wondering, instead of the word hero, we use the word savior. How did this line come about? Was that you? Was that Mike? Was that Dan? How did this thing kind of, this iconic kind of every day I hear people crying for one come about?
It came from the fact that she, in her frustration with his disappearance, the term hero.
Yeah.
Has now, to me, the term hero to me is sort of, probably since 9/11, has taken on a different form. And
excellent.
I also felt that the notion of him being away, and his and her, it all came from the article, because the article dealt with comparing, with drawing kind of at times fair and at times unfair messianic comparisons.
Yeah.
So the notion of a hero is different than a savior. I think it came from a hero. It's just that there's something different about a hero and a savior, and I can't quite.
Well, could I suggest that a hero may save you physically, but you might say that a savior might save you physically as well as spiritually.
Well, and a savior is someone that you come to rely upon. A hero may be a hero because they do a heroic thing once.
Yeah.
But a savior is always there.
That's right. It's an eternal saving.
And that's why. And she's writing an article, remember, about herself.
Right.
And to her,
she's not interested in Superman the hero. She's interested in Superman for the long term, for the long haul. She's interested in him always being there. And to her, the term savior represents that more than the simple than the hero who lands the crippled airplane or who solves great mysteries.
Another indelible scene, this is from the New York Times actually bringing this one out, so this is them saying it. So, New York Times wrote this, they said, quote, Superman fights his foes in a scene that visually echoes the Garden betrayal in The Passion of the Christ, unquote. And I'll, actually I think, this is me talking, actually I would put the imagery closer to Christ's march to the crucifixion in terms of the place he's going, the beating, all that. So what were your influences for that scene?
The scene which he were, I'm thinking what scene which he were.
He's on the landmass and he's been stabbed with the kryptonite.
Yeah, when he's beaten with the scourging at the pillar.
Thank you, brother. Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
it's a scourging.
Yeah. I mean, no, that's. I mean, clearly it was what it was.
And it was the Spear of Destiny thing with the whole kind of the
blade in the back.
Yeah.
The kryptonite.
Yeah.
That.
Lex.
And, you know, that Lex, Hall, you know, that Lex, who is bald.
Yeah.
See, I can't really, again, you'd have to, you know, my inspiration is seeing a guy getting, you know, I just, you know, I wanted him to be beaten and beaten and beaten.
Yeah.
Beaten and beaten and then stabbed.
Yeah.
And then still have some life in him.
Yeah.
And then instead of ascend, he falls.
Yeah.
Falls into the water.
When he
falls into the water, we hear the voices of his. He's with his father.
Right.
And his father explains to him. If you listen to the voices that are happening in the water, his father is explaining to him things that are much larger than this minuscule moment.
Yeah.
Things that will be about other films, perhaps.
Yeah.
Things that are larger, that even though he's you know, he's been beaten and stabbed and chucked in the, you know,
right,
and sent to drown, that there are forces out there greater than even himself.
And
things about human beings, problems that human beings can solve for themselves. And then we cut to what do we see? A seaplane.
Right.
And this unusual family, this strange modern family flying around trying to find him.
Yeah, he's trying to find him, right, exactly.
But that's the moment where he needed to get so humanly scourged so that he could then when he's with, you know, underwater, his father, that's what I said, you know, then he's with his father, and then his father is saying, look, you know, these are human, you know, what you're experiencing is there are other things, there are greater forces, there's, you know, and he says, if you watch the film, he says there's a number of things taken from the Brando that take us into a different place.
Is it true? And I think it actually greatly helps that as he falls and he is immersed into the water. You know, the whole thing about the baptism thing is supposed to be that it's symbolic of the death, burial, and resurrection. You know, you go into the water, you know, you die, you know, symbolically, right? You know, you're under the water, you're buried, right? And then you come back out of the water, and hey, guess what? You're resurrected. You know, and so you're back out again. So I thought that it...
you're baptized.
Yeah, you're baptized.
So when you fall to earth, you're able to...
Right.
...succeed, and you're sad, but there was still a little piece of... Remember, in the hospital, that's how he... You know, that's the technical part of his resurrection, is the little piece they pull out. And then that, you know, and that's... The little piece they pull out and drop into the steel tray, that's the technical reason. You know, the fairy tale kiss doesn't really work. It's that very scientific little, or not scientific, but very little medical. That little they got that little last piece away from him. But then, there's a mental logic to it, or was it a destiny logic? You know, you don't know. You want to have both.
Walking out of the theater, my sister, 20-something years old, she's an adult, she turns to me and she says, so, Superman having a son, was that by a virgin birth? Because the movie didn't give us a flashback scene or a meaningful conversation
us. It alludes to it in an article. She says, there has to have been an implied, you know, he is not. You know, it is not he's not a divine character
right.
There is an implied relationship between them. There has to be, you know, I'm sorry I left you, Lois. Even the fiancé says, you know, I spent the night with Superman, and she sort of says, well, that was, you know, which again was a
a throwback to the 70s. You know, that was the title of an interview, which is Perry's idea, but, you know, there is some kind of implied relationship.
Gotcha. Yes, yeah, so from Superman 2. And right, and then the whole giving up the powers, becoming Clark, being intimate.
Yeah, I didn't really stick to that.
No.
And on the Mylar bed and the
right.
And
right.
Cocktails in the Fortress of Solitude. I wouldn't want to bring that up, all I wanted to reference is they had a previous. There was some previous relations between them.
In Entertainment Weekly recently, when asked if Superman was still relevant, you said, quote, "Look around. Aren't we crying out for him?" End quote. Now, how are we crying out for this kind of a, you know, savior figure?
I think people right now, more than ever, we've become a very individual, selfish culture.
Yes.
At times. I think people worry, you know, people look at themselves more than they look at the people around them.
Yes.
And I think he represents that kind of character that can walk among us.
Yes.
But has a selfless side.
Yes.
And perhaps it comes from his heritage, his upbringing on the Kent farm in heartland of America, or perhaps it just comes from his the way he sees the world, but he's got a part to him. He has an inspiring side.
Yes.
It would be nice if he could come save us from, you know, terrible things that are happening that we see on the news every night. He is a light at the end of the tunnel, a breath of fresh air. He's all those things that I've always said. But I think as a superhero, instead of being, you know, angst-ridden or bent on revenge, he chooses to see the good. And when there's so much bad happening, it's very, very important to be able to look at a character who, you know, even if he's in tights, and say that, you know, say, hey, maybe I can be a good guy like that.
Yeah. He is the light, you know, the darkness. You know, he's the light to show the way type of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, this has been...
Great people, Caleb. They lack the light.
To show the way.
And he is that light.
Exactly.
And that's something he's maintained for 70 years.
Yeah.
He's always been the good guy. And for me to shy away from that or make him the dark Superman or the...
Yeah.
Angry Superman would be irresponsible.
Yeah, it would have been. And all the people that say, you know, oh, the parallels of him to the light, you know, are, you know, so obvious. You know, they should have made him more like a darker figure. That has never been within the...
That's not who he is. I have those in X-Men, in my X-Men movies. I see that in other films, and there's a time for that, but in this guy, like it or not, that's who he is, and perhaps that's why he survived for 70 years, and perhaps that's why you can take that emblem into the jungle and have that kind of recognition.
You know, one other thing. I had written a book that was called The Gospel According to the World's Greatest Superhero.
Oh, yeah, I know. I have that book. Yeah, you quote me in that book saying...
Yeah.
From the other thing, yeah.
Yeah. You actually have the book. Did they send you over a copy or something?
What?
Did they send you over a copy or something?
Mark gave me a copy. Yeah, it was terrific.
Nice.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah,
oh.
It was pretty extraordinary for having been written before the movie was really... Because
yes.
He wrote it before the movie came
that's
out.
That's right. Yeah.
It's pretty astonishing, the foresight into where we were going with Superman Returns.
Oh, well, thanks.
I was shocked.
Oh, well, thanks. We didn't get it completely right, but we got kind of a thumbnail sketch of the whole thing.
I have it. I've read through it. No, it's extraordinary. Congratulations. That's amazing.
Well.
No one thought when we were put on the phone that I didn't, that connection wasn't made.
Nice. All right. Well, if I can do anything to help out, just, you know, let me know, and I'll be happy to do that.
Well, you've done so much already, and I appreciate it, and congratulations on the book. It's extraordinary.
Well, but bigger congratulations goes to you with Superman Returns, and of course, can't wait for further adventures of the Man of Steel.
Well, thank you.
You bet.